Hi and welcome back. This week I talk to Stefan Pretty as we go through what it means to be an entrepreneur and starting a business from scratch. Here to talk to you today about yourself as an entrepreneur. Was this something you always envisioned yourself doing, kind of going it alone?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this recently because of all the, well, not all of the extra time, but the extra mental space from the lockdown. And yeah, so I think it was almost like an inevitability just based on my story and my environment, but also my kind of DNA as well, considering my, you know, my family members that I was around when I was growing up. So I would say it was, I'm a product of my circumstances and environment.
Right, okay.
Which is probably not the the popular answer, to be honest with you. But at the same time, it's so ingrained in me that I feel like it's who I am, like to my core, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I, when I talk to like different people from different backgrounds, you often find that the ones that have their parents who own their own businesses are definitely more comfortable with taking those risks rather than kids from parents who have just like worked in a business and been quite comfortable that way. I think that makes a lot of sense because it is a risk factor.
Yeah, so interestingly, yeah, it's all about risk. It's about your risk tolerance. And I think, yeah, my dad had his own business and my uncle has his business. And I think having that kind of exposure obviously led to that kind of being a possibility. But at the same time, on the flip side of it all, I had quite a, I guess you could say, turbulent childhood in certain ways, you know. So I think the pains that I experienced kind of really led me to kind of find myself motivated to basically gain control of my own life. And I mean, I remember the moment I made the decision to like become successful to the point where nobody else could affect my life, if that makes sense. I know it sounds really simplistic, but I was 8 years old when it happened. And I just remember the moment where I was like, yeah, I'm going to become so successful that I can't get hurt by someone else, basically. Yeah, that was kind of like the conclusion.
Of course. Was there a like trigger to that?
So it was just a combination of multiple events, but basically my parents broke up around about when I was 13, but actually probably a bit later, but I think it started around then. But before that, when I was eight, so my dad had like financial troubles with his business, and I think basically we got the news that we were gonna have to there was a couple of things, but it was all related to his financial circumstances, and it directly impacted the quality of my childhood. And obviously when you're young, you're not as kind of understanding, and I probably was quite at the time like selfish in my train of thought, like, well, you know, I didn't choose this to happen to me, so I don't want that to happen to me again in the future. So I concluded that, well, I can be successful and that won't happen to me, but that's obviously not necessarily true.
No, I completely understand that though. It's just a way of self-preservation. You've been through this crazy time, and I suppose you're just wanting to take it into your own hands and just
which is why they say that entrepreneurs are control freaks, because it kind of is true, to be honest with you, because you're trying to like gain control of your life, you know.
Yeah, every aspect of it, and personal and professional.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, wow. That's so true as well. But yeah, I'm probably not right when I say 8 years old. I think it was more like 12, actually, because I think it was all around about the same time where all these events took place. So. But anyway, yeah. Product of my environment.
So was it a case of that the end goal was, I'm kind of going to own my own company? As I want to go in this direction? Or were you just happy to have any skill and let you see where it took you?
So that's a great question as well. So I the funny thing is, I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur was up until like the age of probably about 13. And I remember my dad gave me business cards because I had my first mobile phone. when Snake was, you know, the creme of all apps. And he gave me business cards and it said on their potential entrepreneur, and I just did not know what that meant. And I remember asking, and that seed had been planted. And I think over time I was naturally inclined to want my own company or to like start something or create, to be honest with you, to create something. My mum's actually very creative. She's extremely talented in so many different ways, and I think I have that kind of creativity from her. So I think that that combination, my dad's business mind and my mum's creativity and my kind of problem-solving attitude that came from that, led to me just deciding I wanted to like start my own company. I mean, there was obviously inspiration along the way, but another thing that happened in my I would say like mid-teens was that I found out, or actually no, at the end of primary school, I realized that I was really good at computers and interested in them. So that my theory on that is because computers are binary. You don't like have to deal with other people's problems.
Straight to
It's true
the
or false. There's no like
point.
complex like emotions to navigate. So
Yeah, that's so true.
that's where the kind of tech interest came from. Obviously that kind of developed over time where I realized that that was an opportunity eventually. So
And what was it you studied at uni?
actually I was studying civil engineering and I was doing it for 2 years and I dropped out actually. I
Did
don't have a
you?
degree. Yeah, so I dropped out because not for this to sound like a sob story. I feel like I'm giving my whole life story here, but
No judgment.
my dad passed away just as I was turning 19, and I think
Right.
like I basically got to the conclusion I was like, I'm not doing a degree that I want to actually do.
Yeah.
And I feel like, so one of the things he actually said to me was when we were looking at the university, because he went on a tour with me because I was going to study aeronautical engineering, because I was I'm really interested in airplanes, so I wanted to be a pilot. But basically he said to me, you know, what did you think of the university? And I said, well, to be honest, I kind of wasn't that enthused. And he was like, well, whatever you choose to do, I'll support you 100%. And those words just came into my mind when he passed away. Like feels right to me. And so I quit uni. Like literally 2 weeks later, I quit uni. I was like, I need to do this. And started, I was already making websites for local businesses and stuff like that. So I was already kind of a freelancer
So
on
it
the
was
side.
a proper life moment that made you kind of reevaluate what
Yeah,
you wanted. Wow, that's really
totally.
interesting. So speaking of the websites, was that something you were always doing on the side as a hobby, or how did that come about?
Yeah, so actually I started it's kind of a long story, so I'll try and keep it condensed. The website design was something I was really interested in because I started like learning Photoshop and like editing photos and stuff like that, and I actually was really interested in photography. And I started my old company was called Pretty Clicks, and as you know, my last name is
I
Pretty,
like that.
so and it was actually for photography. And then I realized I was making websites for myself, and I was like, do you know what? I could probably sell this as a service. And then I started, you know, designing websites for local businesses, and I was making websites for like a couple of hundred quid here or there. It was obviously not a lot of money, but I kept putting the price up and realizing that this, you know, was actually a thing. And then eventually I learned how to make the websites more kind of functional so they could do things rather than just being static and just like looking nice. And then through that process, eventually I was like, okay, well, I can make websites, but how do I sell my services? So I taught myself marketing. So I discovered search engine optimization, and I, you know, optimized my website to rank highly for Glasgow web design back in the day, because I was living in Glasgow back then. And that was it. I started getting clients, people finding the website and contacting me, and I, you know, would meet up with them and close the sale. So I learned sales. So I ended up having like all these skills just through that natural process of being a bit of a jack of all trades. And yeah, that's kind of the
It
beginning
sounds
of it
like you're
all.
just really willing to get stuck in, and you're not intimidated as such. I do, correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem just like super confident to be able to go and execute different things and learn on the job. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. I think I'm actually very good at like I prefer to learn hands-on. I feel like I just it firms up a concept in my head, and I'm actually very determined to get to first principles about something. So like for example, I was fascinated about physics when I was in school, and I used to always sit and think about like really trying to get to the underlying theory to truly understand it, and I would end up like staying back in class after it ended and talking to my physics teacher and really, really trying to understand it, and you know, getting into debates and challenging it and stuff like that. And that I think that same approach applies
Right.
to other things that I'm interested in. So I have to be interested in
Yes.
it, first of all. And if I am, then I'll get my hands mucky and that's how I'll learn. But yeah, I think it's less feasible these days as the business keeps growing. There's too many things to be, done and to be, get done. So I basically have to hire other experts who are better than me or could ever be with my time restraints.
That's the
So
beauty of being a boss, though. You just get to hire other people to do the work for you.
I guess so, yeah. Brings this whole other set of
Oh, I
challenges
can
and stresses,
imagine. I
though.
can imagine. So, this moment you were freelancing, weren't you? And you were working completely by yourself. Is that something you really feel comfortable doing? Just going solo?
Yes, I guess I am. But it does get it's very difficult. It can be very lonely at times because you've only got yourself to answer to. So when you are feeling like I've got a dilemma or I've got a really difficult decision to make, that's where ideally you'd have sort of like a mentor or somebody you trust and you look up to for inspiration. And I mentioned it earlier about my dad, and I think like I always was very lucky to have some really great people in my life that I could turn to for solid advice. So yeah, as much as like being on my own is like a thing that I can thrive at, it's also, I'm learning over time that actually the people around you are really, really just as important as your ability to thrive on your own as well. I mean, if I was to do it again, I actually think I would probably maybe find like co-founders that would be really specialized in something that I would say is like my weakness, if
Yeah,
that
that
makes
makes sense.
sense. But I wouldn't necessarily, in an ideal situation, wouldn't necessarily have somebody who's going to be, making strategic final decisions, if that makes sense. Because I feel like I've got like that vision in my head I really want to execute on. But of course, I really do think it's important to bounce ideas off of other people to what's the word? Like stress test them.
I completely get that, especially from working from home myself for the past year. You just come to a point where you realize you do need people around you. Even if you're like, the task in front of me is a solo one, this can completely be done with no help, but there's just such a value just going to someone for a bit of advice, even if the stakes aren't that high. It's just comforting, isn't it?
100%, especially now, yeah. I mean, look, everybody's probably feeling rather lonely right now, especially if you're single or you're kind of isolated from your family, etc. And I think yeah, just having somebody or like even a neighbor even a neighbor just to kind of make it a little bit less lonely and somebody that you can turn to for some consoling and somebody you confide in.
So how did Subly come about? Can you tell us a story of that?
So I mentioned Pretty Clicks, the agency. So actually the second part of that story, first of all, so Pretty Clicks, I started as a freelancer and then eventually grew that into an agency. I think there was five or six of us at the peak. And I had moved to Edinburgh at this point, where my sister and my mum were living, so it made sense. And basically, grew Pretty Clicks and then I had a meeting with someone who wanted to start a subscription business. And this was 2004, I'm gonna say 14, 13. I have a feeling it was the end of 2013 actually. And then basically they wanted to start a subscription business and they had a budget in mind. And I looked into like solutions that we could use to build their website for them, as well as do the branding, etc. And nothing was really going to make it possible with the budget that they had. So that's when I kind of had this like light bulb moment because I was thinking, do you know what? I know that the subscription thing is going to be big. I have a feeling, and I just saw this trend emerging. I mean, there was Dollar Shave Club, they went viral with their funny advert. There was Grey's Box that was really, really popular at the time. I mean, they still are. They're in the shops now. Who else? Birchbox. A ton of these early, like initial wave subscription businesses had kind of launched, and it was becoming a thing. And I was like, I need to jump on this, and that was when it started.
Oh my goodness. So when did it actually form as a company?
So from there, after that meeting, I started kind of The name came to me very quickly. It was quite straightforward to come up with, but I had kind of like a bit of a vision, and I actually worked with my team in PrettyClicks to kind of start working on the initial concept and to test the market. So we basically put like a holding page up and check to see how it would perform in Google, etc., and see if there was any interest. And to be honest with you, I was so passionate at this point that I was like, I'm doing this
Yeah.
anyway.
Well,
So
that, you know, that's a good attitude to have though. Because a lot of things don't take off instantly. You need that passion.
I mean, I would say that we were probably too early, but in hindsight, it was actually the right time to get in as well, because I'll tell you in a second. So basically, from there, I locked myself away, and basically kind of phased out PrettyClicks to start Subly, and I went solo again. So I basically, I was doing both at the same time, but over time, my goal was to build this MVP, basically minimum viable product for Subly. So I locked myself away for 3 months and just coded and built the first version, which was terrible.
I
It
bet
was so
was it just
bad.
because in hindsight it's so great
No, Karen, it was so bad. And we got our first customer once we launched. And actually, what happened was it's actually pretty cool. We posted it. Actually, we didn't really have like a major launch. There was no like big unveiling. Launched it, put it live, and then somebody in Edinburgh,
Oh
would
my
you believe
goodness.
it, found it and put it on Product Hunt and hunted it. And I don't know if you know, but Product Hunt is like a really great place for launching products. And we got our first customer from
Wow.
that. So that was our
Yeah.
validation. I mean, in hindsight, I shouldn't have done 3 months of programming, but do you know what? Like, I was lucky that it
Yeah.
worked out in the end. So that would have been about July 2014, I
Well,
think.
that's quite a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I don't hang
Not
around.
at all. I'm learning you don't. When did you first realize that Subly was taking off and here to stay? Because there must have been a moment that you thought,
Oh.
wow, this is really something rather than just a startup.
Yeah, you know what? This is such an unexciting answer, but I would say that I think that it's still just taking off. I think it's still just starting up. And so the first like couple of years like were just like grinding. Like it was just so hard. And like to be honest with you, I had it all wrong in hindsight, but that's why I'm glad I took the path of bootstrapping, because I learned a lot of really tough lessons over a period of time. I probably could have accelerated the whole process had I taken a slightly different approach. But the first couple of years were just cool. It was fun. I was doing the startup thing, and I actually brought a good friend on board, and he was like kind of like a co-founder for like a year, but then he had to leave because of his term sheet with his other startup that he was working with, and we're still really, really good friends. So like it was amicable. And then basically from there, it just was really slow. Like I'll be honest with you, like it was slow, painful progress. And this went on for years. And to cut a long story short, I ended up like moving, well, like spending a bit of time out in LA. And I got into a relationship. It wasn't a great relationship. And then I came out of the relationship, and I realized that the business had been basically plateaued. And so from that moment, I was like, I've got to go all in or nothing. And some of my like entrepreneur friends were like, what's going on? You've been doing this for like 3, 4 years now. You haven't like hit those crazy goals and like what they would be satisfied by. And I was like, no, I still believe in this. I still think that this is the right thing to do. I mean, there was a lot of buzz at certain points along that journey up until this point, but like it had plateaued clearly. And I was like, I need to do something about this. And what I'd been doing for the previous like year, like 3 or 4 years, was basically like incremental, tiny little tweaks. But what was wrong with that approach was that I was actually not fixing the thing that really needed to be fixed, which was like much bigger than that, more fundamental. So I asked myself the question. I said, what is the one thing that I don't want to do? I was like, what is it I'm putting off here? Like, because and when I asked that question, there was a bunch of big, massive projects that I'd been kind of avoiding, and instead I'd been doing the creator thing and just polishing and tweaking things, which felt like I was doing things. I felt like it felt like progress, but I wasn't actually moving the needle. So I was like, okay, I need to do the big, ugly thing here. So I basically chose like these horrible projects that were massive, and was like, okay, And I took, this is ridiculous, but I took a personal loan and put the money in the business, hired some people and worked on those projects and spent like 6 months. This was a gamble. Like at this stage, this was like a gamble. And, but I still had this dying like belief. I was like, I know that this has got to be like, it's got to work. And I just held on to that for some reason. I couldn't like let it go. So I, we launched the projects and, basically, you know, obviously those like releases and launches are kind of typically anticlimactic, but what happened next was like a week later, I noticed that there had been like a slight uptick in signups, and then that turned into a month, then 2 months, and 3 months. But I had this, I'd been so tainted on my journey that I was like kind of in disbelief, like, yeah, it's probably just a fluke, it's probably gonna dip back down again because it's, you know, that's just the way it goes. And then 6 months passed, and the business had doubled, and I was like, I've got to accept that this is reality now. And I ended up depressed for 3 weeks because I had to let go of my like struggling entrepreneur identity. And I was basically mourning that because I had nowhere to hide anymore. I basically had to show up. I was like, this is a real business now. I've doubled it. You know, like I've got to show up and deliver on my word now. Like that's, it was like, it was just a really strange like transition. And then from there, like I would say that's when it started to get serious. And in the last 2 years, it's just been like insane. I mean, like the last 3 years, we've doubled year on year. So it's just been like, whoa. And every I catch myself every 6 months being like,
Oh, that's
whoa.
so great. I love that your gut just was telling you to go for it as well. Like, even you, though you mentioned your friends were kind of like, oh, like, are you sure? But you were like, no.
There was a lot
Yeah,
of
but you
doubt,
know
yeah.
yourself, when it's your own project, you can tell if it's worth pursuing. And obviously, it definitely was. You mentioned briefly bootstrapping, and I know that's something you discuss a lot in your online content. Can you just give us a wee bit of an overview about what it is and why it's important to your business? Alchemy by Ashley is a soy, vegan, organic homeware brand handmade locally in Fife. Many well-known home fragrance products emit high levels of chemicals into your home, but Alchemy by Ashley is kind to your lungs and the essential oils within the products are good for your mind and body. Alchemy by Ashley has kindly given our listeners 15% off all products. Just quote Galvanize when you're at the checkout.
Sure. So bootstrapping is basically a term that's used for if you start a business with no funding. It's like you basically are just using your skills and your time and any resources that you have to start a project. It could be anything. It doesn't have to necessarily be a business, but that's what it means as a definition. So I actually decided to not raise money and go the traditional route of a startup. And I'm not entirely sure why, to be honest with you. Oh, actually, no. We did talk with investors back when I had that co-founder temporarily, and we went to San Francisco and like met with like guys who had invested in like Facebook and stuff like that, and it was serious. And that's when I realized I was like, well, in hindsight, I realize now that I was very naive. But I think through that kind of like rejection, I mean, they gave us great advice, but I think I got like even more determined
Oh,
actually
great.
to like be like, I'm going to prove you wrong and I'll do this myself. And I think that kind of just stuck with me. I was like, no, I'm going to do this the bootstrapping way. I'm going to prove that the impossible is possible because everybody said you're not going to be able to do it. You're going to need like to raise like millions to make that business work because it's just so expensive to set up. And here we are now, 7 years later, still doing it. So, that's yeah, the bootstrap side of things. And there's a whole like you know, philosophy and approach to bootstrapping that like you can really dive into. I mean, I mentioned the word minimum viable product earlier, which basically is like a part of the lean startup principles, which is a great book by Eric Ries, I think. It's called The Lean Startup, and it basically explains like what it means to like iterate and build an MVP. It doesn't necessarily mean like you have to bootstrap it to take that approach, but you're more likely to take that approach if you have limited resources, or you should. And in fact, all businesses should take that approach, to be honest with you. It's just much more
Resourceful
resourceful.
and definitely more healthy for growing a business.
Yeah, because there's that whole when you're bootstrapped, you're basically you're having to build a profitable business, right? Because you can only grow as fast as the revenue that you're generating. So you don't just like take on a chunk of cash and just allocate it and spend it. And if I'd done that with the experience that I had back then, I probably would have burnt that money unnecessarily and ended up in a tight corner, and probably may have ended up not being able to continue. So the other thing about bootstrapping is it teaches you how to be extremely resourceful in a healthy manner, as you rightly
Wow,
stated.
I'm interested as to when you actually started to hire employees and branched out a little bit more, because you are someone that definitely gets the job done on his own. But I'm interested to hear when you thought, I actually could use a hand.
Yeah, it's funny, like the delegation thing is something I've really struggled with over time. In fact, I would bold statement, I would actually say that the taking the plunge and giving up control in terms of delegation has actually been the biggest contributor to recent success. And there's a point where you could hold your baby too tightly, where you strangle it basically,
Smother.
right? You end up start yeah smothering it and starving it of oxygen. And I think that it's a great metaphor for a business, that there becomes a time and a point where you have to let go of control for it to continue growing. Because I see like a company as like an organism, and your goal is to get that organism to self-sustain, right? So that it can grow and live on its own without you needing to. But that's difficult for a founder to do, I think, especially if they've been in the trenches doing it themselves for years, right? So that transition was really, really difficult, just to make that clear. Basically, when I took that personal bank loan, I was doing everything, customer support, you name it, for so long, and it just became too much, where people were getting upset, there were slow response times. It was terrible. I always valued like giving like the best service. So, I hired a customer support person and an engineer, a developer, at the same time when I took that bank loan, personal bank loan, and put it into the business. And it was the best thing I ever did. But I still struggled with delegation from then on. It's only in the last 2 years I really gotten to grips and become a believer of hiring and the best people basically, and creating an amazing team and
Just out of
organization.
curiosity, what's your issue with delegation? Is it something that's uncomfortable to you, or
It's a control thing, isn't it? It's kind of back to the first point earlier on about the kind of desire to be in control and to make sure that everything's perfect. It's like I'm a massive perfectionist, and I think it's the lack of trust with other people, basically, right? So I'm worried that if I'm not doing it, or I'm not overseeing it, it's going to end up not being done to the standard that I would want to do it myself. And that's just, excuse my language, but that's BS, right? That's not true. I mean, there's other things you can do to avoid low quality going out the door of the business, right? So And that's where you really should focus on when you start delegating. And I think it's like, okay, what can we put in place here that makes sure that the standard and the quality is always up to what I want for the company and the brand? So that's the kind of, yeah, I think I answered the
No,
question.
you did. That's nice and honest. I've noticed you have quite a few social media accounts linked to both your personal identity and Subly. And your YouTube, for example, that is a great way for you to connect with your existing and prospective customers. But why do you think it's important for you to use social media? Because not all businesses do it.
Yeah, so for Subly itself, I think content is so critical. If you're not doing content and you're not doing content well, you're gonna become you're at high risk of becoming irrelevant in the next like 5 years. Although with that said, I think there's an evolution taking place in the world of content, where quality matters more than anything right now, because there's just so much of it. Like there's this idea of signal versus noise, and I think that you need to become the signal and not risk becoming noise. So, I think that content is a really powerful tool to reach a wider audience and actually add to the top of your funnel. So yeah, I think that's why we're doing content, apart from the fact that you can actually use it as a tool to teach and educate people as well and help inspire and communicate a message. Do you know what I mean? I think that that's what it is. It's like the power of written word is so high that like it's the equivalent of that when you can do it in video form and other
Yeah, I've
mediums.
noticed you do that a lot as well with your podcast. So for those of you guys that don't know, Stefan has a podcast that was launched last September. Am I right in saying that? Yeah, called
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Subscription Rockstars. And it's a conversation about like-minded businesses. And it really is there to educate, which I think is so interesting because sometimes you find businesses want to hold their cards closer to their chest to have a little bit of a competitive edge, but you have the opposite approach and you want to actually help and inspire and inform. So why is that?
I think that oh, it's a really difficult question to answer. Wow.
I'm not saying you shouldn't be doing it, by the way. I think it's great.
No. I just think that so it's like the ideas are cheap and execution is expensive. So it's all about the execution, right? So, you could tell someone how to do something, but they won't necessarily execute it correctly. So I'm not too worried about people copying us or stealing our ideas. I mean, obviously there's two parts to it. So there's my own personal content, which is more about bootstrapping, as you said, and SaaS businesses, software as a service, which is what we are. And then you've got the other side of it, which is the businesses that we serve who are doing subscription businesses are kind of, we're a subscription business as well, ultimately. But yeah, I just think that, at the end of the day, you can't really replicate something that easily, so I'm not worried about that. But I think inspiring people is really important, and more importantly, educating them or giving them resources or at least pointing them in the right direction. Because I think back to when I was starting out, and I'm forever grateful to the people that I look up to even today who wrote and created content that inspired me and educated me to get to where I am today. So it's kind of like
I
paying it forward.
completely agree with you on that. I have met so many amazing people throughout my time of just doing random bits and pieces, and there has always been someone there who is more than willing to help in such a generous way as well. And I'm always super surprised because sometimes you think that it is like a competition thing, like everyone kind of needs to look out for themselves, especially in this crazy world of social media where you literally can do it yourself without any help. But people just are like, I'm always so surprised in such a pleasant way that people want to pass on advice. It's lovely.
Yeah, it is very, very nice, and it's very important. It's actually critical. Like, if you think about it, certain things in life, you're just not going to find the instructions for online.
Exactly.
And I know it's it's so easy to get answers on the internet for almost anything, but there's certain things you're just not going to get an answer for, and it's going to require advice from people who have walked that walk themselves. And also, it's worth noting, Karen, that I definitely suffer from imposter syndrome. For a very long time, I was putting off creating content, and I still struggle with it, to be honest with you. Who am I to, who am I to be the one to give this advice? Do you know what I mean? It's like, by it's something that I think everybody probably suffers from a little bit to a
I
certain
really think
extent.
so, but in the same respect, who are you not to give that advice? Do you know what I mean? Like when you think about it like that, it just completely makes sense. And the more we share, the more rounded the information in the world will be. And it can be even something as silly as like a little bit of content on Instagram, for example. You are just putting yourself out there and just giving people instruction. It could be something as silly as like from a perspective, something I've done. I'm no makeup artist, but I've done a makeup tutorial before. And yeah, I get the imposter syndrome. Like, who's going to take advice from me on how to like blend foundation or something? Something so silly like that. But people want to see it. People want to support you. And like, why not? You know, Shaden's Kaden. And
Yeah, true. Why not? Actually, that's a great way of looking at it.
exactly.
Why
And I
not?
just think that we've both benefited from elder people or more experienced people in their fields giving us advice. And I think that makes you more willing to pass it on.
Yeah, I think so. And along may that continue because, it's absolutely necessary for
Of
all progress
course,
in life,
I
isn't it?
completely agree. So just to touch on your podcast again, what has it been like? Have you enjoyed it just as a fellow podcaster?
Yeah, I do enjoy the process of podcasting. I think it's quite a great it's a great like platform for learning. It's actually so for as an interviewer, you actually learn a lot by doing it. There's a guy in our community and in our industry who is basically starting a subscription business, right? And he basically identified that there was a bit of a gap in the market for a podcast for our industry. Obviously, we're doing one ourselves as well, but he basically was like, "Well, I'm starting a subscription business. How can I learn as quickly as possible how to do it the right way?" He basically set up this podcast, combined the two, and interviewed he did 150 episodes through the lockdown, interviewing all of the most knowledgeable people, and now he's like ready to launch his
Wow.
business.
That's
So that's one
good
thing
way to do
that comes from
research.
it.
Difficult, time consuming, but effective.
But so I think it's a great
Yeah.
way to learn and connect with people. I think that's like the first and foremost part, like the
Yeah.
bit I like the most about it. Apart from that, I think again it's going back to like what's the purpose of the content, like helping others and educating them. It's
Yeah.
fun. I'm a creative person, and it's kind of a bit of a creative outlet for me, to be honest with
I
you.
agree.
I mean, the vlogging's hard. I mean, I'm sitting here with bushy hair because of the lockdown. I don't really have the
Oh,
heart to get in front of
same.
a
My roots are down to my
camera
ears. It's stressful.
right now, but so there's that as well. Video content is really, really difficult. So podcasts are just a bit easier. I mean, it's like
Yeah.
Clubhouse right now, right? Clubhouse is exploding, and it's a great platform because you don't have to put yourself on camera. It's a bit more private, but it's still very intimate. I mean, voice
I
is a really
agree.
intimate thing. I think people underestimate how intimate a voice note is. Like even when we have the option to send a voice note on WhatsApp or on iMessage or whatever you use, like people tend not to because they're so shy and it feels too intimate for them. And so yeah, I'm a big fan of
Yeah,
voice
and I
communication.
think it's so funny. So many people hate sending voice notes, and it is a comfort thing. You only really do it to people that you trust. And on a
Totally.
podcasting thing as well, I always laugh. The first time my mum listened to one of my podcasts, she said, "But it's just like me listening to your phone conversation." And I'm like, "Mum, that's exactly what it is. It's a phone conversation that I've saved and uploaded." But it's true, like you are, it is so intimate to have that conversation between two people, but you then share it. I love it.
Yeah, and you
You
feel like you know that
do.
person afterwards as
You
well.
do.
It's like, I feel like I could reach out to any of the guests that I've had on the Subscription Rockstars podcast, and I feel like I could, strike up a conversation and have a chat with them. It's a really
Yes,
powerful networking
I
tool as well.
100% agree. So one thing I'd like to touch on just before you go is mindset. I know you're a big advocate for that, and it's something that is important to you throughout all your platforms. Do you think you need a specific mindset to become an entrepreneur?
Yes. So I'm going to unpack this a little bit. So basically, for me, there's two parts. There's mindset and there's the mental health aspect of it. So I'm a massive advocate for mental health, a big, big believer in it. And I think that, given the way things are just now, but in general, with our, we're all overloaded with too much information, and society is evolving so quickly in the way that we communicate, etc. The nuances of interactions are evolving all the time. It creates a lot of anxiety. So the first thing is to get your mental health in check, right? So that's part one of mindset. Without that piece taken care of, you're not going to be having a good mindset for entrepreneurship anyway. And the ironic thing is, Karen, is that entrepreneurship can oftentimes come from poor mental health, as in the desire and goals that are set or that are so high, the ambition, the drive can come from an unhealthy place because of pain, which is
It is.
ironic,
I've
right?
never thought of it like that.
So yeah, so it's a really difficult one to kind of navigate, because it's like, well, if you are motivated and inspired and have something that you're really passionate about, then if it's coming from an unhealthy place, then you don't want to get rid of those flames, but at the same time you want to be in a healthy place where you're actually dealing with whatever it is that you're having a hard time with. So that's part one, and that's an ongoing journey for me. And I actually always say that, it's ironic how we have, most people are really like focused on their physical health. They're like, their appearance, like going to the gym and getting in shape, and then the next thing on their list of priorities tends to be, in fact, before that would actually be like entertainment, like PlayStation, drinks, and fun, right? And then it's the physical health, and the last thing on their list is mental health, because like maybe one day I'll have enough money to pay for a therapist, right? So I believe it should be the other way around, because really your mental health is like where you exist. Your brain is where you exist. That's where you experience your reality. Then it should be your physical health. Then it should be your entertainment, because ultimately, if you're feeling good about yourself and about the world around you, you're not going to need as much
Exactly, that you're
entertainment
just more
anyway.
content with what you have. It makes so much sense.
Right, exactly. You've become more grateful. You feel fonder feelings towards yourself. People call it self-love. I think calling it self-love actually puts people off, because I think that people think it's cheesy, and they think they understand it, but until they really, really, really connect with what that means, I think they kind of avoid it when people call it self-love. So that's why I said like fonder feelings towards yourself, like liking who you are as a person. So
No, keep
blabbing
blabbing.
here,
It's really interesting.
but the other part is from the mindset perspective is obviously down to like, so I kind of subscribe to a bit of a stoic, like stoicism, stoic mindset. So, one thing that's required for entrepreneurship and success, I believe, is like really having a lot of tenacity and resilience, and not letting the waves of life affect you, especially in like success isn't a straight line, right? Success is like ups and downs over a long period of time, right? To get to your destination. So you need to be able to weather that storm, because otherwise you're going to give in before you're maybe so close to your goal you don't realize it. I don't know if you've seen that image where the guy's like got his pickaxe and he's mining and digging through the tunnel, and there's like a thingy of diamonds on the other side, and he's about like one more strike of the pickaxe away from it, but he's given up and he's walking the other way. Like that's what
That's
it really
so
is
true.
like.
You
So
just
you
never
just
know
got to
what's
keep
around the
going.
corner, so you just need to keep pushing through.
Tenacity and persistence, those are the main things I think for success. I mean, and always seeking the truth. And what I mean by that is, being able to accept that you're wrong. So if you've got an idea and you're trying to achieve a goal, and you've got an approach to it, and you keep trying the same thing over and over again, and you're like you're just so stubborn that you're not going to change your approach, then you obviously won't succeed either. So you have to be like able to say to yourself like, I'm wrong. I think I might be wrong here, and then trying to look into
It's
what
kind of
actually
like
the truth
a
is.
pride thing. You just need to swallow it, take a step back, because it can be so hard to do. You've created this thing that you love and you think is the best thing in the world, and it's just not working, and you just need to remove yourself emotionally. And take another look back at it. Wow, and have you ever struggled with some of those points?
The mental health side of things, yes. I would say that I have pretty bad anxiety, and I don't think there's ever going to be a point in my future where anxiety doesn't exist. I think everybody has anxiety. It's a necessary part of survival. It's just like human nature. It's learning to live with it. That's the key, right? But no, I'm actually very persistent, tenacious person. I think because of my childhood, again, talking about being a product of my environment and my upbringing, like I've been through a lot of rubbish, and I think that it's taught me that it does, there always is an ending to it, and that it does get better, and that you can, if you persist long enough, some people say like the key to success is literally outlasting the
I've
competition.
never heard of that one, but man, that makes sense.
So yeah, I've not necessarily struggled with that. Obviously, there were times where I questioned whether I was doing the right thing or not, and whether I should give up or not. But yeah, it's not in my nature to do that. So
Yeah, fortunately,
fortunately.
exactly. Stefan, we will finish with your quote, please, that you like to live by.
Yep, certainly. So the one that I want to
Yeah.
share, can you hear me?
No, you're
Sorry,
fine.
I thought I broke out for a second. I said, sorry, I was saying that my quote that I like to live by is, I be radically proactive about any behavior that pays off in 10 years. So basically, I have this like long-term vision thinking, and you gotta like put the behaviors in place today that you believe will lead to your goal that you have
Yeah,
for in 10 years' time.
that makes so much sense.
And that's by a guy called James Clear, who wrote the book Atomic Habits, which is
Oh, I
just
need to
an
give that a
incredible
listen.
book.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Galvanize. And of course, a huge thank you to Stefan Pretty, who was my guest this week. Again, I'd like to thank Alchemy by Ash for providing a discount code for all the listeners. It's well worth using because her candles and wax melts and diffusers are insane. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll talk to you next week.